advise. 3, 2, 1, go! Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew. Loveline, coast to coast.
Hey, everybody. It is Loveline. I'm Adam. That is not Dr. Drew. That's Dr. Bruce, who, if you listen to the show with any regularity, you know him as Dr. Spaz. He's filling in for Dr.
Don't
Drew.
Start.
Filling in for Dr. Drew tonight, who is God knows where, making what kind of money while he's getting paid for this show simultaneously. What a genius. Just signed our 3-year contract, and the next day, signed it last night, the next day he's off.
Good business.
Chasing a nickel in Poughkeepsie while he's on the clock here. I think we should dock him, but be that as it may, Dr. Bruce is just as qualified as Dr. Drew.
You want to go through my qualifications?
Addiction medicine.
Uh-huh.
You know that, yes?
Oh, yeah.
You know emergency medicine.
Oh, yeah.
You remove tattoos from inmates.
The laser is a...
He knows the laser well.
...of youth for all people.
Can remove those teardrop tats from those of you who've done time and don't want to advertise that to the world.
And F the LAPD from the forehead, that's a good...
And F the LAPD from the forehead of some of the other good folks that have been incarcerated.
Can I say hi to the guys at California Youth Authority in Chino?
Only if they promise not to kill me if and when they're paroled.
Hey, they're rehabilitating.
All right, and what else do you do? That's it, right? Emergency, addiction, tattoos.
Yeah, laser.
That's good. That's enough.
And I have my boards in internal medicine, of course.
Right.
Which makes me as qualified as you.
All right. Tonight, we're talking a little bit of racing. It's the IRL series, right? Yes?
That's correct.
I'm good. Eddie Cheever Jr. is here, and Philippe Giafone. It's Giafone or Giafone?
Giafone.
Giafone, that's better. Giafone was a rookie of the year last year, and of course Eddie Cheever. And I was reading on your chart here, Eddie, that
that's not a medical chart, is it, that you're reading?
No. But we can pull that up via the internet later on and really get into the ins and outs. But this guy, let's see, what's it say? 132 Grand Prix races, more than Mario Andretti, more than Dan Gurney. That's pretty good. Is that true?
Oh, well, if anything is written, it's true.
Jesus Christ!
I have been racing for quite some time though. The other day, I was some kid walked up and said, "I saw your dad race in Monaco." And obviously, it wasn't my dad; it was me, just a long time ago.
Yeah, people do that with Drew. They go, "Well, we used to hear your dad on the radio show 15 years ago." They say, no, that's my career stalled 1984.
Well, unacceptable.
No,
unacceptable.
It is. And so the Indy, can we call it the Indy Series or we call it the IRL Series?
What are you more comfortable with? Indy Racing League Series, Indy. These are the cars that race at Indy. These are the drivers that race at Indy. Good thing about Indy, you never have to explain it to anybody.
Right, and I know there was always some problem with, CART and Formula One or CART and Indy many years ago, but I think most of the lay people understand the Indy 500, and these are the cars that race in that competition. And the series is going to start on March 2nd, and it goes through September 15th with, of course, the Indianapolis 500. Somewhere in the middle there, a little closer to the front. And what are you guys out here doing now? Are you testing?
We were just testing today in Fontana. It was the first day. It's called the Test in the West. So we all got down to Fontana and tested. Now tomorrow we travel over to Phoenix and we have our second test in Phoenix.
And how does that work? You obviously, your sponsors bring the cars out and you try to dial them in, essentially?
Yeah, we... Every team in racing is sponsored or has corporations that push it because we are obviously dressed in their colors. You go out,
right.
I mean, our car is the Red Bull Infinity car,
right.
And Felipe's car is a Hollywood car, which is a cigarette from Brazil, and Penske has Marlboro. So we're all dressed in our different colors. We got there and we do battle, and the fastest car wins, and it's a hell of a technical battle. At the end of the day, it's about people competing in the fastest racing cars in the world on ovals in the States.
What is the fastest track that you guys run on?
I think it's still Indy. I think we'll be qualifying at Indy this year in excess of 226 mile an hour average. That means you'll be about 234, 235 straight
on the straights.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And don't they, I mean, did they have restrictions and things, right? I mean, there's certain little things. You could go faster if it was completely unlimited.
They do put rules in. I think the rules are put in place because there is no need to put drivers at silly risk.
And no, I'm 230 something is fast enough. I'm just saying it's even possible to go faster.
Sure.
If it was not for some, I don't know, they have rules for weight or displacement or some of the things involving aerodynamics or like some of the wings and scoops and
absolutely.
That kind of stuff.
I could probably walk to the third floor of this building and jump off and maybe make it. I mean, you got to try it once, but you never know. The thing with driving at Indy is that you are participating in an incredibly difficult event, and I think they have to put rules in place that are responsible. I actually have the record at Indy for 236 average. 236.1 average in the race, and I remember turning into the corners at 250 miles an hour and thinking, if so much as a fly hits the car in the wrong place, you're going to spin off and hit a wall. It's silly. So that's the good thing about the Indy Racing League is they've gone out of their way to make sure it's a good, safe show and the drivers aren't put at unnecessary risk.
What are they? Do you guys shift on the wheel or do you shift down below?
To a side.
To the side, it's like a sequential, like a motorcycle.
Back is up a gear and forward is downshifting. But if you're downshifting in an Indy car,
bad
you're
times.
Deep in. They're going to be passing you really quickly.
Wait a minute, did we just hear the S word there, Anderson? All right, come on, this isn't the paddock.
It's a racing term, Adam.
Oh, I see. It almost sounded like shift.
I said you're deep in shift.
Jeez. Oh, deep in shift. That's right, deep in the shift. Yeah, you're downshifting.
Downshifting.
All right. And do you guys do, are there courses that are like kind of, are they all ovals or are there any like road courses?
We only race on ovals.
No, that's all, is that all lefts?
All left.
All right.
If you go right at Indy, you're leaving the track.
Yeah, it is an amazing, absolutely amazing event. How many people show up for that 500 in person?
How many are there?
I think 450, 500.
A thousand, that is.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest spectator event in the United States.
Not probably. It is the largest spectator how can I say, event?
Well, now that since the XFL is folded, I think it is now officially taken over the number one slot. I remember when the Reno Gamblers were playing the Argonauts.
You're the only one that remembers.
Of Salem, Mass. And that was pretty big turnout.
This is the guy's wanted to
people.
Take this call.
Oh, okay. Molly?
I was having sex with this guy in the shower the other day, and he used a condom, and I wanted to know if that was safe.
Yeah. Hey, well, as far as we know, it is. I usually put a scoop of water in there to kind of help the cause. He didn't. Did he do that?
I don't think so.
No. And who is this guy?
My friend.
Oh, I see. And do you like him?
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe you guys maybe be boyfriend and girlfriend, right?
Probably not.
Why not?
He has a girlfriend.
Oh.
Don't!
Yeah. What's going on with that?
I don't know.
So it's a guy with healthy boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, listen, I did not nail her on dry land. So why in the shower, by the way?
That's just where we were.
I see. Boy, you really tell a fascinating story there, Molly.
Yeah.
All right, so you're 17, right?
Uh-huh.
Why you sound older? Have you been through a lot?
No.
Okay.
How old's the guy?
I think 17 or 18.
So are you feeling a little guilty about being involved with somebody that already has a girlfriend?
Yeah, I am, and so is he.
All right.
So you'll never do it again?
No, just oral. That's his new, made that proclamation last time they spoke. All right, hey, Molly.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you get a boyfriend for yourself?
I'm working on that.
All right. And I think you can. I think the condom works okay in the shower, right?
Condoms work in various bodies of water. And the issue being...
Well, look, I remember smuggling almost a kilo of heroin into Mexico, and that was in a condom, and that was up my ass for like 3 days, and no problems at all.
Well,
So I couldn't see why you couldn't use one in a shower.
Yeah, the problem with condoms, some studies have shown up to 26%.
See, Eddie's going, why'd I get beeped for saying the S word 5 minutes ago?
You have it down to a science as to what you can and can't say. But I've had anal sex and I passed out a couple
Bruce,
times.
Bruce, please, the mics are hot. Go ahead.
Up to 26% of the time in some studies, condoms don't work, mostly because of user inability to properly monitor their position. And
what do you guys do when you're trapped in that car for long periods of time and you have to relieve yourself? Do you just?
I'm really glad we've actually changed gear and gone to a different question. Because when you looked at me and started saying something, I thought, I don't know where to hide right now. when you have to relieve yourself?
Yeah, I mean, can you get out of the car?
No, I mean once the race starts,
you're in.
You're in. I mean, I don't know. I heard Felipe Brazil release himself in the car, but I would never do something like that.
That is word.
Word has it. Is that on his resume? It is about the third page.
It alludes to it. It doesn't specifically outline it, but yeah, it drinks too much. Oh no, wait, you don't drink the Red Bull. You smoke the Hollywood cigarettes.
I drink.
That's right. That's right. RJ.
Yes.
You're 18?
Yes.
What's up?
My question was basically about enemas and...
Oh, please. Come on, let's clean the show up a little, Doctor.
We have continuing the line of comedy for you.
Let's take something for our guests. They don't...
Well, that's a medical question, actually.
They don't want to talk about enemas. No. We'll talk to them in 2 minutes. Okay. Keith?
Hey.
You're 30?
I got a question for your guest.
Yeah.
All right, Eddie, you say Red Bull's one of your sponsors?
That's right.
I bet a half a can of that will keep you going for the entire race.
That's correct.
Wrong.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's great. They say it gives you wings, and they ain't lying. I know one thing. When I drink Red Bull, I got to have something to do. If I don't have something to do, I'm going to be going crazy. So,
well, you just pick at yourself, you know.
No, you can do a million things. It's your choice.
Dr. Drew's wife's drink is Red Bull and vodka, by the way, which I hear works out pretty good. I don't know. I've never had it. But apparently the people do this with the vodka, and it's pretty good.
For my honeymoon. It's
you did?
Yeah.
You did the Red Bull and vodka? Not bad?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody's marketing a drink. Alcohol
great.
And
Red together?
Bull.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, Keith?
Since we just did like a 60-second commercial, can I get a case of it or something?
Yeah, but it's going to be open.
What's your other question there, Keith?
All right. Been seeing a girl. I wouldn't say necessarily she's a girlfriend, but I've been dating her for about 6 months now, and yet I still continue to hook up with other girls, you know, make out, not necessarily like have sex with, but I still tend to have this selfish tendency to want to hook up with other girls. And I just want to know if that's a sign of addictive personality, if that's something that can ever be fixed. What's your comment on that?
Well, how long have you been seeing her?
Like 6 months.
And are you committed?
I think she thinks so more than I do. But I think we kind of just haven't talked enough about that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, she's just assuming through your actions because you're having sex with her, right?
Yes.
And so she's just doing the math and assuming you guys are committed and you're not going to tell her otherwise.
Exactly.
But it doesn't sound like you're that into her.
Oh, I'm very into her. It's just that I have this, like I said, selfish part of me that wants to still hook up and have my cake and eat it too, basically.
Well, I mean, do you think you're 30 years old. Do you think you want to get married to her?
The thoughts cross my mind. She's pretty good people.
Yeah.
It's interesting you use the word addictive because you've obviously made the self-observation that what you're doing is not totally within your control. It's probably a pattern you've had in other relationships. And, you know, one of the reasons when kids call in and they're fooling around and they're fooling around with more than one person once, even at a much younger age, a lot of these things turn into patterns. And what we know of addiction now is very interesting. Your brain actually changes. We call it plasticity. And we used to think that when you had an addictive problem or a behavior that you tended to pursue against your own will at times, you know, that it was just a bad habit. But it turns out your brain actually changes its connection so that it seems more normal when you're doing something like that eventually to continue to do it. And changing takes actually work and a lot of effort. And when we refer you to a therapist for something like this, two things. First of all, it's not just going and having them give you advice. They help you to work to overcome a problem like this. And secondly, they get into issues of, like, what was your relationship with your mom or in your family of origin. So, you know, I'd wonder what was going on in what your parents' relationship was like, what you saw when you were growing up. And
Well, how was that?
Good stuff. I mean, it is a pattern. and I had a great family life growing up, so I don't really think that that is a source of it.
Well, maybe just an a-hole.
True.
I mean, man, some guys are selfish.
Yeah, but he's calling in. He sounds like he's got a conscience, and he doesn't want to continue that behavior. But it's not just going to go. You're not just going to wake up one day and say, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore. It's going to be something. Just like with addictions, you can realize you have a problem and decide you want to quit, but there's a road you have to take that involves work.
Well, listen, if you know what you're doing and you don't like what you're doing, or you at least know it's wrong, then feel free to stop.
But, Adam, let's be honest. I like it at the time it's happening.
Right.
Yeah, all right, but it's that way with everything that's bad for you.
Right.
Everything that's bad for you is good at the time. I don't know why.
You're going to need some help with the problem and the fact that it does feel good. If you talk to anybody that does have another kind of addiction, and there is definitely a connection between this and any other kind of chemical addiction. What you're doing makes you feel good in a part of your brain that's the same part of the brain that cocaine or another chemical would.
Right, Bruce, let's not save everybody.
Can we save it? Can we try and save it?
No.
Okay, so I can tell I'm not going to get much further. Go to a therapist. No, you realize you have the problem. You got somebody that sounds like a good woman. And if you want to save this relationship, you're either going to have a disaster that's going to make you depressed and lead you to a therapist, or you're going to go on your own.
I go on your own.
And he may end up in SA, meaning Sexaholics Anonymous.
There's where you can get laid. I want to ask Eddie and Philippe something. I was just seeing, I don't know what I was watching, some TV show. Maybe I was watching, I watch about 20 hours of Speed Vision every.
That's an addiction.
Oh, my God. It's more addictive than the actual speed is. You know, the two things that have destroyed my life is the TiVo and then the Speed Vision. Because all of a sudden, it's 4:30 in the morning, and I'm watching motorcycle ice racing from Finland, and I'm
live,
and I'm standing up, cheering, and I'm making plans. I got to get me an ice bike. It's a ridiculous channel, and I can't stop. I watch all those ridiculous hot rod shows and all that dream car garage and all these. That's all I do is watch every commercials for wax. I don't care. I watch that. But they had some sort of like a round table, and I think they were talking about Formula One at the time, but they were talking about putting essentially black boxes in cars, like what they have for airplanes, so that they can monitor what goes wrong or what the impact was, if there's an accident, or even to the point where they're talking about doing adjustments while the car's in motion from the pit area. I don't know, maybe leaning it out or richening it up or something like that. Is there been any discussion with the Indy cars about doing like a black box?
We actually have a box like that in our cars that measures the impact. We've done a lot of work to make the cars safer, and a lot of money has been spent in time studying the accidents. The fastest way to learn how to make a car safer is to study and see what happens after it's had an accident. This box that we have measures what we call the G-force loading.
Right.
In other words, if you take a billiard ball and you throw it at a wall, there's energy, kinetic energy, that has to be dissipated someplace. And the worst place to dissipate that energy is in the human body. So everything around you has got to break.
Right.
And the best accidents are the ones where you see the tires flying up, the car flipping. The worst ones are the ones that are just a cold, hard thud, because it all goes into the driver. But
right.
It is illegal to modify any action in the car.
Right.
From the pits. Otherwise, you might as well just put a monkey in it, and you know, they'll decide to go in the corner a little bit faster, a little bit slower. So
right.
I remember discussions in Formula One when I was racing 10 years ago.
I would watch, by the way, if that was on Speed Vision, monkey racing. I would watch that. Monkey ice motorcycle racing from Helsinki. I'd be up watching that, too. Yeah, what were you saying before I cut you off about years ago you saw something or heard something?
No, years ago that was a problem in Formula One. It had gotten to the fact that it was so technical that the engine manufacturers wanted to modify some settings in the engine when they saw something was failing. And I remember the FIA, the International Federation of Automobile, passed a rule saying that you couldn't do that. Whatever happens in the car is sent over in telemetry to the pit, so they know what's going on. So they have a screen where they can see
right.
Your engine is failing. I have a sensor in my tire that sends a signal every quarter of a second saying your tire still has good tire pressure. So I have a warning if something goes wrong.
Right.
So you really don't want to have that. You really want to stay away from that.
Well, and then they were speculating that guys from the other teams could pick up the signal and adjust the guy's engine and screw it up, and that the monkey would then crash into the wall. It was quite a debacle. But I the thing that amazes me about racing and talking about the safety is just watching the speed vision, watching these races from the 50s, 60s, even 70s. I mean, they barely had the notion of the crash helmet down in the 50s. You know, they had that sort of half thing that went on top with the leather ear flaps and no roll bars and no seat belts. And it just, I talked about it on the show a million times. I think it had to be bravado as far as, like, the roll bar goes.
I mean, I got a good story for you.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Sterling Moss. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen him on Speed Vision. He was an Englishman. Probably, I would say, probably one of the top three drivers in the world. And I'm talking Fangio, Senna, drivers of that category in Formula One.
Right.
He did not want to wear seatbelts in the beginning because he thought it was safer if he had an accident that he'd get catapulted out of the car.
Yeah, well,
now looking back and thinking about that now, you'd think, well, I mean, what were you smoking? I mean, Jesus, why would you want to get catapulted out of a car going 120 miles an hour? So the good thing about racing is that a lot of this technology that we have developed, right, seatbelts, disc brakes, all of that does get passed on in safety. So your point is well taken. I'm sure you're looking at the cars now. 20 years from now, you'll say, what sort of, they're wearing a carbon fiber helmet? Were they crazy? They could have used some new polymer or something.
Well, and also, though, I mean, he had a point about getting thrown out of the car because they couldn't figure out the goddamn roll bar. So it was like you'd get your head taken off if you stayed in the car. But anyway, I've talked about that way too many times on this show for a non-racing show. Why don't we take ourselves a little break? When we come back, we'll speak to it. You want to talk to the anima person when we come back?
I'd be more than happy to.
Or we'll let the racers pick the call.
I think Felipe should really talk about the anima thing.
Felipe, where are you from, Felipe?
Brazil.
So that's a way of life over there, right?
Yeah.
It's all in the flag. Yeah. You're not seeing the flag? We gotta. All right, we'll take ourselves a little break. We'll be right back. Yep. Oh, there you go. Hey, Anderson, you know, I can't read your hand sometimes when you point it and you keep it in front of you because I lose it in your face. You know, I see that. Yeah, you do that big wave thing. I told you that's why I got into radio, so I get that big arm finger you give me. All right, it is Love Line. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Bruce over there filling in for Dr. Drew, who is off somewhere else, but will be back tomorrow. I'll also be here tomorrow, except for I won't be here. I'll be in Vegas, and Drew will be somewhere else. But don't worry, we will deliver. Eddie Cheever Jr. is here, and Philippe Giafone. Eddie Cheever's been racing cars since just a couple of years before the car was invented. And Philippe was Rookie of the Year last year in the Indy Series, the IRL Series. So these guys have been around the track just a few times at speeds well over 200 miles an hour. And Jesus, what a sport. And talk about, you know, the thing that's amazing about, like, the Indy 500 is that race goes on for some hours, right? Is it like 3 hours? 3 hours?
Three and a half.
3.5 hours. It's all focus. You know what I mean? I mean, you can't blink for 3.5 hours. That's the part that's pretty incredible about the whole thing.
The beauty about the Indy 500 is that there's 33 drivers that start, and they've had to work their, what words can we use here? Can you word?
Tokai.
Their tokai off to qualify for the race. And at the end of that afternoon, there will be a new Indianapolis 500 winner. And people all over the world will acknowledge that as having won the most important car race of the year.
And you won in 98?
Uh-huh.
That must have been nice, drinking the milk and doing that whole thing.
The hard thing is that you race for 3.5 hours. You're incredibly focused. You have 8 pit stops to make. You can't make a screw up. And And then you get down to those last 10 laps, and your crew is counting down 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, and this tension builds, and you're breaking away from the pack, and you're totally exhausted, but you don't know it because you've been driving so hard. You finish, you cross the line, and you realize it's like a big balloon. All this air goes out of it, and you realize that you just won the most important race of your life. And then you drive into the pits, and you've been by yourself for 3.5 hours. You've been dodging bullets and hand grenades and ducking and weaving and almost bouncing off things. And you come into the pits, and all of a sudden, ABC will stick a microphone in your face, and you're expected to say something intelligent. I mean, you have all these people, there's all this quiet goes over the speedway, and it's very hard. I mean, so you get the milk, and I drank the milk in a hurry, and I slobbered it all, so the whole afternoon is over, and I call my young son, and I'm always giving him a hard time because every time he eats, half the food lands on the floor. He didn't say, I thought I was going to have this male bonding session with my son. You know, I've just won the Indy 500, and my son's going to tell me what a great dad I am. And he said, Dad, you're a pig. You slobbered the milk everywhere. So that was my male bonding session with my son. But it is a great event. It's a great honor to win. It's a great honor to participate in. And you have great drivers like Felipe that come. He comes from Brazil. And you'll have people coming from Chile and from France and all over the world. And
sort of cutting you off, but a big racing place. I mean, and I don't know why I wouldn't normally think of Brazil as cranking out the champions, but they like the racing over there.
Felipe is one of the brightest new drivers we've had in oval racing in the States, and it's cool that he comes from Brazil. I mean, Brazil, that's a different country. I went there when I was 18 for the first Grand Prix that I tried to qualify for, and it is, they are different.
And that is incredible. I mean, I would say the most glamorous of any sport would have to be the Grand Prix stuff, like over in Europe or Brazil, mm-hmm. some place like that. I mean, in terms of the yachts and money, I mean, in terms of the average income of the guys who get the pit passes, wouldn't you say that Formula One is way up there? Well, say above, like, let's say a tractor pull or maybe arena football.
Or what was that motorcycle race from Finland you were talking about? Yeah,
ice racing from Helsinki.
Something like good that. Stuff.
And then barrel jumping. Yeah. Well, you know what you got to do? I just thought about after you win the next Indy and they shove that mic in your face, you do what athletes do to buy time, which is you thank Jesus Christ. Which is really, they're not really that much into God, but they do it to kind of think, you know, they try to get their breath back. It's a nice time saver, no one will ever question it. So it kind of gets you straightened out.
Like Disney, I'm going to Disneyland.
Well, they got to ask you to go, though. You don't want to just announce you're going to Disneyland. Send the love to the kids and thank Jesus Christ, and by the time you're done doing that, you'll get your bearings straight. Because I always think about that with boxers, too. The guy just goes 12, 15 hard rounds of Tyson smacking him about the head, and they put the mic in his face, and they go, in round two, he caught you. And your legs got a little wobbly. Did it hurt you? And it's like,
of course
you know,
idiot.
You've been whacked in the head with a 2x4 repeatedly for the last hour. Like you know exactly what he's talking about. Hey, speaking of boxing, Ali.
Yeah.
Is it Ali?
Yes, Ali.
Well, there you go. You're 17. What's up?
Yeah. I have a question. I've been watching races like a couple times, but I don't watch it for very long each time I do.
Yeah.
I've been wondering, can you guys like have like a spare car in the pit? So like instead of like when your tires run out or run out of gas or whatever, you can just like pull up to the pit or whatever, like switch cars real quick instead of waiting for everyone to like, you know, refuel your car.
Very funny. Ha! Yeah, you're a real genius there, Ali.
Yeah,
I guess it's going to take, like, it takes a very long time for us to change cars, and just to put the seat belts on, it takes, like, 5 minutes. We change tires in 15 seconds, so.
But you can bring a couple of cars with you, but you got to qualify one of them, and that's the car you got, right?
Yeah, usually we take two cars. We have the race car and a spare car, and whichever you qualify, you have to race with. So, but usually, like the big teams are, we usually have two cars that you can like try different setups during the weekend.
Right.
And then, but then once you qualify with a car, then you have to race with.
Right, and you're trying to set up the suspension or the right tire combination or something like that, and you dial it in, and that's the one you go with. And the thing about seems the qualifications, I mean, how, first off, how many people, like for the Indy 500, how many people will try to qualify?
Probably over 50. There'll probably be 50, over 50, maybe 455 qualifying attempts. I don't know the number, but it's a very, it's a complicated procedure. You have pole weekend, which is the first weekend. And,
right.
And then the people that don't make, you'll say you have the whole grid is filled,
right.
And you have something called bump day. And that is the most excruciating, horrible thing for any driver to be involved in. Because you have 200,000 fans that are sitting there cheering for the guy who's going to get bumped off. And you go out and you do, put four laps together, the best average four laps, and you are hanging it out. I mean, when you're trying to get into the race, you'll often drive harder than you will trying to qualify for pole.
Right, right. Yeah, I could see that. And it's just separated by, you know, hundredths of a second oftentimes, right?
Even less. Even less. I mean, and
I don't know what you're not, what would be the next one? Thousandths?
Thousandth. I actually lost pole last year for, I think it was 0.004 of a second or something.
Really?
It's not much. It's probably, I don't know, a third of a foot.
Jesus Christ.
Is there any other sport where your life more depends on the other guy? It seems like you really have to, you're competing with everybody, but if somebody else is, you know, too aggressive or they're not as coordinated, they could.
Or if they're an idiot.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, yeah.
Well, it seems like with, like, stock car racing, you can do some bumping and some shoving and stuff, but with open wheels, that's going to be trouble, right?
No,
you guys can't do that.
No.
No,
it happens, though. I mean, you make... It happens too often, and you can make a mistake. The worst thing that shouldn't happen and has happened in our past is the drivers will use their cars as trying to intimidate somebody, like to move them over the track. And you can't touch. You'll be sure of one thing. If you touch a car, I guarantee you, you're going to hit something. And going at those speeds, and when you start spinning, you don't know what side's going to hit. I mean, but it's the most exhilarating racing I have ever been in. To come out to Fontana and see cars turning into the corners at above 220 miles an hour, three abreast, 4 inches between them, and if any of them so much as blink, you're going to have a problem. And they're both trying, all three are trying to out-dice each other. It's crazy. It's cool.
And when the thing about the open wheels is, I mean, they if they touch in any way, it just sends things sailing.
You guys have teams, right? And you can help the other guy. They can draft you, and you might not let somebody else do that, or no.
Yeah, we do.
But there's certain drivers. I will draft with Felipe because I know he will in turn return the favor. The car that's in front is
He told me he wouldn't during the commercial. I don't know. You were taking a leak.
Yeah.
He told me not to say anything. But
okay, I want that Red Bull back then.
Let's save the baby.
All right.
It's a really great sport. It's really exciting. It's just neat. It's really cool to go out there and race.
I'm going out to a race this year. I'm going to the drag races on Sunday. I'm trying to get to more motor related stuff. Yeah, you want to go?
Yeah.
All right. Rhea?
Hey.
You're 16. What's up?
Yeah. I have this stupid habit that whenever I like a guy and we start dating, the second it starts to get serious, I find something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And just focus on it, and then I break it off. And I was just wondering why I keep doing this with, like, every single guy.
Well, where's your dad?
He's still in the same state, but I don't see him.
Uh-huh. When did he cut out?
4 years ago when my parents got divorced.
And does he keep in touch?
Well, yeah, he does, but it's me that I don't want to see him.
Why?
Because he's bipolar.
Oh, so he was kind of freaky growing up?
Yeah.
So he, like, scared you?
Yeah, it's, like, totally my decision.
Yeah. See, I mean, this thing that you do is a real common thing. All women do it, you know, when they're younger, but usually as they get less, it goes away as they get less attractive.
Yeah.
You know, the years wear on, they get nicer about it. Stop nitpicking. But when your dad leaves and your dad's weird like that and everything, usually means you're a little bit scared of intimacy. You don't want to get caught up in a relationship. So you start looking for reasons not to be in a relationship, and then you end up getting out of the relationship. It's all about being sort of that fear of being connected.
And once I break off with it, I end up, like, wanting him back, and I realize, like, how stupid I was.
Yeah.
But it's not stupid. And does what Adam's saying...
Well, it's just slightly dumb, yeah.
Make sense to you?
Yeah, because I understand it. It's just... Yeah.
It's going to continue.
There's a way I could, like, stop doing it.
Yeah. Did you ever have any family therapy when your dad was going through his bipolar stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And you have access to, you're going through some stuff at this age especially. Well, it's really chaotic and it's really a lot of unexpected stuff when you start dating. But when you have something like that thrown into it, it can be very confusing. And so that, to avoid making this a pattern of what you're going to go through as you get older and you really want to, you know, when you're 16, you go out with a guy for a while and then you meet another guy, that's fine. But if you could go to a therapist, have somebody you can talk to about what's going on as you date somebody, because it's not something that your intuition, there's nowhere in your brain that's going to tell you what to do and why this or that's okay. So you could really benefit from somebody helping you through some of this stuff with a guy. If you have a normal dad and you have a good relationship, then there's some things that are sort of programmed into your brain that make it easy for you to get close to somebody. And you don't have that. It's not your fault.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
If you could...
Well, hey, Rhea.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know what you're doing, but that doesn't mean it's easy to stop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just going to be a process. You work on it. You're not supposed to be any good at 16 anyway. I didn't know what I was doing at 16. Everyone's a horrible, you know, everyone's horrible at dating at 16. But you're a smart person. You understand what's going on. And the important thing is that you see yourself doing it as you're doing it. And then you do it a little less each time. And eventually, you know, you get numb. And then you slip into a world of a dark world of masturbation, and you shut yourself off.
Adam's world is
you
called.
You watch ice racing from Helsinki all night, and you just sit around waiting for the Grim Reaper. All right.
Okay.
All right. Good times.
Okay.
Good
what?
Times.
Thanks.
Good times. Yeah. She'll be fine.
Yeah.
Listen, you know, Eddie, you have a daughter, right? Yeah. You got to be good to her.
So I have a 13-year-old, about to be 13-year-old daughter.
Let me tell you.
And I'm sitting here. Just thinking, what are my next 3 years going to be like?
Oh, well, first off, I don't know if...
Three? How about five?
You can have them frozen now until we've... And just suspend them.
At
yeah, that's not... I think you can do it in Florida. I don't think it's a criminal offense.
No.
Hopefully that technology will be in place when I have a 13-year-old daughter. But here's the thing. This is the one thing I've learned from this show, besides all radio station coffee sucks. The other most important thing I've learned is if you screw with your daughter, it will affect her. The relationship between the daughter and the daddy is a big deal. Boys, they're more durable. They just are. They, you know, their dad screws them over. He's an alcoholic. He leaves the family. They just end up taking their aggressions out on the football field or something like that, or they join the Coast Guard or something. It ends up working out. They usually kill a handful of people, but it works out. But the women, they're more delicately wired. They really are. And if you screw with your daughters, it will come back to haunt you. All right? All right. Yeah?
After
I remember being a child, being a lot simpler than it is now. I mean, a lot of these questions they're asking, you're talking about probably, I'm 44, so things are a bit different then. But
yeah.
I see my daughter as somebody who knows a lot more than I ever did.
Oh, yeah.
And they're capable of thinking it through a lot better than I ever was.
It's not even did. She knows more than you know now.
Yeah, don't. On some things, absolutely.
Well, I mean, look at this. I mean, of course. I was watching, you know, I had three stations to watch on TV. And, you know, I mean, this thing about the Internet and MTV and all this stuff, the heads are going to be packed full of sin by the time.
But it can also be packed full of great things.
Yeah.
If they understand what is right and what is wrong. I think a parent really, the main job my parents did is this is wrong.
Right.
That is right. And you're going to have to judge yourself because you can't have a parent there with you every 2 minutes saying, do this, don't do that.
But Adam has some confusion in those areas. And I don't think you can imagine your daughter calling in for advice from Adam Carolla. Drew's here.
Yes.
All right.
We're going to take ourselves a little break. When we come back, we'll speak to Andy. He's a big Eddie Cheever Jr. fan. And wants to know about the F1 car, Formula One car racing and all that after this. Everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam. That is Dr. Bruce over there filling in for Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Eddie Cheever Jr. is here and Philippe Diafoni. both IndyCar racers, and the season starts up, what is it, March? Yeah, just real soon now. That's going to be in Miami at the Speedway, and then it's about every week after that, right? All the way through till September. Of course, the big one, the Indy 500, coming up in on May 26. What's the second biggest race you guys have on your schedule here?
In attendance, it's probably been Texas. Texas has been a strong one for us, but last year we had four. Hey, I got to meet this guy who does all this. Is it a person?
Yeah.
What is he?
You met him. He's sitting right behind you. He's a squirrely kid with the bleached hair.
Texas. We had a lot of sellouts last year. About Kansas was a great race. I mean, it's a great event. It's not just a race. It's an event that the whole city gets behind it. People have, you know, barbecues in the parking lots, and families bring their kids, and we're open for autograph sessions. And I've met more little kids that look up at you, and I can see they're dreaming. You know, one day I'm gonna be here. One day I'm gonna be driving. I think it's just cool. I like it because it's very open to family. So the good Indy is an event. It's a social event. The whole city goes crazy.
Yeah, and they come out and they camp out, right? Yeah, they bring their Winnebagos and park in the infield and all that stuff.
I mean, I've been stopped for speeding in Indy probably five times, at least two in the last 3 years. And the cop will get out and he'll look at me and he'll give me a what's the word you can use for your backside that's
all
right here?
Tokai?
I can't use something. Tokai just doesn't sound
right.
No, okay.
Asshole.
Yeah, we'll get you a big, serious ass chewing. And then he'll tell you, okay, all right, Eddie, go on. You can go there. So, I mean, Indy is just a marvelous place. I love it. I live there part of the year. It's a great event. And there's just so much history. It's just neat.
Yeah, and you know what I like? I like that stripe of brick they have going across the old brickyard.
And you can feel it. You can feel it.
I mean,
it's like a large, not like a shutter, but you can feel going on. But can you imagine doing 500 miles? Was it 87 years ago? I think we've had 87, 500. And these guys had to have spare drivers. They had to get out of the car, and somebody would relieve them a little bit and go out again. I don't know how many hours it would take with these cars that were
chain-driven.
Yeah.
And, they're just, oh, my God. Yeah.
Hard men. There's pictures of these guys, and it's unreal after the race.
Yeah, the faces are blackened.
Oh, and,
all right, let's talk to a big Eddie Cheever fan, Andy.
Hey, what's up, you guys?
Hey, 22, what's up?
I'm a big Eddie Cheever fan. I've seen you race in Phoenix. You're a hell of a wheelman. But recently I've gotten way into the F1. I don't know why, it's just, I guess, so high-tech and glamorous. And I've gone to a few GPs, and I'm starting to, I have a good job, I'm starting to make some money, but I would drop it all just for the chance to join the F1 circus and get going with them. Do you know any way to get started?
I agree with you. And I'll tell you the truth, the main reason why I started racing, why I was attracted to it, was A, the cars, and B, the women. When I was 13 years old, the Grand Prix race car drivers had the prettiest women, they traveled to all the really cool places, and they got to drive these really fast cars, and that is not a lie. I was lucky to drive in it, but it is really interesting, and there's 1,001 ways you can do that. You can be involved in marketing, you can be involved in the technical side of the company.
Well, what do you want to do, Andy?
Well, I'm still in school, and
How old are you?
If maybe like a journalism degree or something like that. Probably too old to start, you know, thinking about ever driving for F1, but there's so many jobs probably in the whole circus. I don't know where I would even begin, though.
Well, what about hooking up with some of the big sponsors or something like that?
Yeah, I guess I could do that.
Well, what do you want Eddie to do? Make a phone call?
Yeah, I was hoping talk to somebody to really get me in.
Yeah, he could probably get you about third or fourth on the grid, but I don't think he can get you pulled just from the phone call. I mean, you're going to have to turn a few laps. He doesn't have that much pull.
Too bad there's not an American F1 team.
There will be.
Yeah, there isn't an American Formula One team.
Jaguar.
But it's kind of it's very tongue-in-cheek.
Can I get a job at their wind tunnel? Isn't it in California?
One of them is, I think, but they're also using one in England. I mean, Formula One is a multi-billion-dollar business. They have interests all over the world. I think it's a circus. There's a lot of people that travel all over. All these Grand Prix, you start in one part of the world, you end up in another. One of the U.S. Grand Prix, the U.S. Grand Prix, is now being held in Indianapolis. So there's a million and one ways to do it. If you wanted to become a Grand Prix driver, you're talking to the wrong guy, because I really couldn't tell you how to do that. And that's where I spent most of my time, but there's...
And you drove for a Ferrari most of that time?
I tested for Ferrari when I was 18. I raced for Tyrrell, Renault, Alfa. And when I was doing it, it really wasn't followed a lot in the States. It was a very European sport, and it was great. I had a great time representing America, and the U.S. Grand Prix for me were a lot of fun. But it is very glamorous. It's very hard technically. It's ruthless. I mean, you so much as blink, you're out of a drive and not doing something, and you can never give an inch to another race car driver. And racing on ovals is different than racing on a Grand Prix. That you're always tethered to the car that you're driving in motorsports. But in Formula One, if you start off the season with a car that isn't good, you're screwed. For the rest of the season, you'll be happy if you end up fourth or fifth in a race, and it just wears on you after a while.
All right. What's the race you're always trying to get into? You complain they never let you drive.
The Helsinki.
No.
I'm trying the Toyota Grand Prix Long Beach. Yeah. I'm working on that this year again. All right. We'll take ourselves a little break. We'll be back talk a little more indie driving and helping the kids after this. Yep, there we go. More Loveline. Eddie Cheever Jr. is here, along with Philippe Schiaffoni. Both racing Indy cars for a living, and yeah, what a life. Just sitting here talking cars with the guys. Yeah, I always find that race car drivers seem to drive the least glamorous street cars. I guess they don't have to compensate like rock star drivers or radio show hosts or anything like that. But race car drivers, you know, like Tommy Lee came over here from Motley Crue about 3 years ago, and his everyday driver is a very modified Ferrari Testarossa that he let me take for a little spin around the block. And I think they overcompensate the race car drivers.
These guys probably have a lot more fun in their cars than the track.
Yeah.
Don't need to.
Still seems like you should have a slightly cooler car. I think...
What could be cooler than my Indy car? I mean, what? Just tell me one car that's the same as what it has 3,000 pounds of downforce. It goes 240 miles an hour. It's got a 7-horsepower engine.
A-track.
If I want it, I got room for it. I mean, what can be better? That's the problem. Why? Where's the excitement? I mean, I want to sit in a car and be comfortable and turn the music up and put the seat back. And
how much do those Indy cars weigh these days? A couple thousand pounds?
I think it's 1,700.
Oh, really? That's light.
Carbon fiber, highest technology you can think. It absorbs a lot of impact.
Jesus. And they have, you guys have like sort of the crash seat too now, right? Where you're sitting in that bucket that's got some protective qualities.
It's better than that. It's a special, imagine sitting in a bag of little beads. Now, it's not warm. They put you in your seat. This little seat, this thing of beads,
right,
fills around the shape of your body, and it absorbs all this energy if you have an accident. So it's disposable if you have an accident. When you have an accident, you have to try to destroy the car.
Right.
The seat has got to break.
Right.
The monocoque has got to fall off.
Even if it means taking a bat to it.
Yeah, whatever. You have to get rid of all that energy. So our cars are built for that. I mean, a car that's come done, ready to go, ready to race, ready to win, is going to cost you probably close to about $500,000 with computers, engines, frames, tires.
Yeah, and you got to have extra everything. And what do you, does the engine get torn down and rebuilt after every race?
Every 600 miles, it's taken apart.
But now, what if you got it? So obviously, after the Indy 500, it's coming apart. But if you have a race that's 250 miles, you'll let it if it checks out, go a couple races with it.
Well, you practice a little bit and then you change the engine. Usually,
oh, I
you
see.
Don't
get
use
some
the
practice.
Same engine for two races.
Right, and it, they just tear it, just new bearings and new rings and put it back, or the new pistons and everything.
$3,000
Jesus. All right.
Let's heal some babies.
All right. That's why they got to have sponsors. Jacob.
Hello.
You're 16.
Yeah.
What's up?
I had a question for Philippe and Edward. I was wondering, like, nowadays you guys are pulling like 240 miles per hour. I was wondering, like, in 50 years, how fast do you think race cars are going to go?
243, 240, 242.
I think that we're actually slowing down the speeds now nowadays. I think it's very easy to make the car to go fast. That's why the rules are there, you know, just to kind of protect a little bit more the drivers and be a little safer. So what they, I think the speed's gonna be a little pretty close from what we have today. Basically what they're gonna do, nowadays we use like 3.5 liter, you know, the engines. So then it's the engineers and all the mechanics, you know, the factories, they try to improve and make something to go faster and faster. So I think this is good for technology, you know, because it's going to get faster, and then they're going to go, okay, now it's 3 liter and then 2.5, and that makes everybody thinks better and improve the street cars in the future as well.
Right. So if it was just a sort of unlimited cylinders or unlimited displacement, you wouldn't have to be that smart to get more horsepower. You just add some more cylinders or some more displacement.
But
now they're figuring out ways. I mean, displacement meaning making the engine bigger, you idiots. But so now what they're doing is they have to figure out a way to squeeze more horsepower out of smaller engines, which is why, for instance, you can buy, you know, street cars that are 2 liters with 200 horsepower now. And, you know, 100 ponies a liter is, naturally aspirated. No turbo, no supercharger. That's pretty good. And that's probably another benefit of racing.
Efficiency. Efficiency. We're always working for efficiency. The people that make the rules, they try to make the rules in such a manner so that you won't go over certain speed limits and it will remain safe. The problem is they're not as smart as the ones that are trying to beat them.
Right.
So when they give us a set of rules, I have a whole group of engineers, and it's more people than they have on their own board where they try to decide the rules. But it's not just me, it's Felipe's team and it's Penske's, and we're all doing everything we can to get as much speed out of these cars as we can. And every now and again they gotta say, look, we gotta go from a 4 liter to a 3.5 liter to a 3 liter and so on and so forth.
But it's about competition. It's not a drag race. I mean, like in baseball, they could use aluminum bats and the ball would travel 30 feet further on a home run, but they don't have that. You know what I mean? There's
they might not have it with bats, but those baseball players sure are getting big. If you were to check them out 20 years ago, they're a lot bigger now than they were then. That's because they're trying to do everything they can to get the most
within the rules.
Within the rules.
Right. And the rules are there to make it competitive.
And it's exciting.
Right. Unlike something like, for instance, I was talking about going out to the drag races this week. You know, that's just one of those.
But that's different.
Crazy things.
I've never been to one. Is it pretty neat?
It's scary.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, I'll tell you one thing they're going to do is, I know this drag race. I know it just sounds like I'm getting deeper and deeper into the white trash here with the, you know, going to the supercross races and stuff. But I'll go and check out anything that I will, I don't care if it's mud wrestling or drag racing. If it's impressive, it's impressive. The dragsters, here's the thing that's crazy about the dragsters. The dragsters, first off, they don't know how many horsepower they have because there's no dyno for an engine that just blows up, basically. But, you know, they got like 20,000 horsepower or something like completely radically insane. And it doesn't sound like an engine. It sounds like an explosion. And the pits are open. You can walk up and down the pits, and these things just burn nitro. And they have them up on these jack stands, and they fire these blown, you know, Hemi big block engines up that are running off all nitro. and it just sounds like explosions going off, and they're spitting out nitro. I mean, you can't see. Your eyes are burning. These things are spinning around. Kids are trying to eat snow cones and walk around. One of those dragsters is coming off the jack stands and going right through a whole group of kids, and that'll be the end of that. So my feeling is here's what I try to do in life, and I think you should too. You should look for the stuff that's going to be shut down in a few years. And you know, there was all this is how everything eventually goes. And I went to the Super Bowl this year. It took me 2 hours in line. They searched every cavity I had to walk through. You know, the metal detectors. They had me vomit into a bucket to make sure I wasn't smuggling any contraband in. And I was standing next to a guy in line, and I was saying, imagine what the Super Bowl was like in 1972. I mean, you could have walked in with a briefcase full of plastic explosives and a bazooka, and no one would have, and a pony keg, and no one would have even slowed you down. You got to look for those things that exist now that someone's going to put an end to soon. For me, one of those things is drag racing.
I respect those guys. They are nuts.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it.
Well, they're nuts. That's how they do it.
I was actually on an interview the day with Force, and he's something else. I mean, these guys, they get in these cars, and they can't see, they can't breathe, they explode every now and again, and they're going.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the record on a motorcycle is 243 miles an hour. Can you imagine how much skin you would go off on your, would just burn off on your body if you hit the ground going 230 miles an hour?
Yeah, and the guys in the funny cars and dragsters are doing like 325, 330.
It's scary just sitting there.
It does. It sounds like an explosion going off. It doesn't sound like a souped up engine. It just sounds like someone threw a grenade.
First time you go, you're not like, is this the way it's supposed to be? You think the whole thing's going to blow up.
That's why you got to get drunk. You have to numb yourself with booze. Otherwise, it's too much to process. That's what I do. I start right with the booze. I go right for the hospitality hut. Kayla?
Yeah?
You're 15?
Yeah.
What's up?
I wanted to know if they allow girls into drag racing.
Yeah, they're called...
No.
They're called pit girls. They run around in go-go boots, and they hand out skull, chewing tobacco. It's great. There's room for everybody. What, you mean you want to drag race?
Yeah.
Well, there's Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney. And she's been around or was around 30 years ago.
Women have become very successful in motorsports. In the IRL, there's a young woman called Sarah Fisher who is very fast, incredibly popular with the fans, very committed to what she's doing. And I think the world is changing. Before, you would think that girls would sit home and play with dolls. I mean, now that just isn't the case. Sarah is one hell of a race car driver.
And they're good. First off, a lot of the reasons the teams like them is because their insurance is lower. We all know women do get a break, even on the circuit. But, hey, Kayla?
Yeah?
You want a drag race?
Yeah.
And why?
Well, because my sister's boyfriend, he's into it, and I go to most of all of his races, and I really like it. It's just fun.
Well, you know, they have those drag racing schools. You can go there, get a feel for it.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that? And if you're interested in it.
I'll look into it.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. But. Yeah, the women do fine with that because their reaction time is fine and they're a little bit lighter and their endurance is probably a little better than guys sometimes.
You don't need endurance in drag racing.
No, not drag seconds. Racing, but I mean like...
You need to be certifiably crazy, I think. And then if you can do that, if you're willing to sit over a keg of nitro and just aim this thing down the straightaway, then...
Oh, my God. I love this show because I end up talking about drag racing for 2 hours. But the craziest thing, you go to the drag racing museum over there in Pomona and you see those cars that were running in the 50s and the 60s. They're sitting right on top of the pumpkin there. They got the differentials like between their legs. I mean, when they used to have the engine in front on the rails, you do the math. The engine is in front of you, the drive shaft's 3 feet long, and the differential... meaning the axle for all the lay people, the rear axle, it's right between your legs.
And they're not designed to take, would you say, 20,000 horsepower? So every now and again, something breaks in it.
Yeah, that's like sitting on a grenade. So it's bad times. That drag racing. AJ?
Hello?
Hey, you're 17. What's up?
Hey, I was just wondering, Eddie, what happened to all the
short track racers that would race in the Indy 500. Where are the old AJ Foyts and Mario Andretti's, Pirelli Jones? They'd win the Indy 500 next week. They'd show up at a quarter mile dirt track. What happened to all those guys?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I think that really is the main reason why the Indy Racing League was created in the beginning. A lot of those drivers that came from short tracks were, like you said, the ones that became the Indianapolis 500 champions and heroes of American racing. And I think with the event of kart going on road racing, it took the emphasis off those short tracks. Short tracks are really cool. You go to a short track, you see a mom and a dad, and they've got this 16-year-old kid that has a great passion for racing, and they work on the car together. They race it. This kid goes out there and kicks everybody's butt, and all of a sudden he would have the opportunity and the talent to race, but he couldn't go any higher because it wasn't possible. There was this big bridge that was missing from short tracks to the Indianapolis 500. Then you created the Indy 500, not the Indy 500, the IRL, and along comes a driver like Tony Stewart. I mean, I met Tony Stewart, who now has become one of the NASCAR's best. I was at a race in Indianapolis, and they told me to look at this kid. They said he's really good, very brave. And he was very good and very brave. I went and talked to him, and he was all dirty, and he had mud on his hands, but he had a look in his eye like he wanted to go kick everybody's butt. No matter what he sat in, he didn't care. But there was no way for him to go into the 500. Then he did, came in, won the IRL's championship, then went on and raced the NASCAR. But that's a really good question.
Is short track always dirt, or does it not have
to? It can be dirt, anything. It can be pavement. You're racing midget, Silver Crown, and these are cars that have been around forever. It's a really good series, and there's a whole mountain of race car drivers that compete there. But what's really neat about it is it is American racing. I mean, you don't get any more American than that. It's like football. But there was no bridge. The bridge was cut off from those short tracks to the Indy 500. Now it's in place again. And that really is the main reason why the IRL was created, to give opportunity to people like this.
Well, thanks there, AJ.
Thanks. AJ,
were you named after AJ Foyt?
No, not really, but he's one of my heroes.
All right, well, why don't you just go ahead and say you were.
Okay, yeah, his name after AJ Foyt.
Well, be a little more organic. I'll try it one more time. Were you named after AJ Foyt?
Yep.
All righty.
But I'd want to meet him first before I'd say that. I drove for him. You might want to actually spend a few minutes with him before you say that.
Pain in the ass.
The most opinionated man I've ever met. But
really?
If he wasn't there, you would have to invent him because he is quite unique.
Oh, Foyt. Who knew he was a big a-hole?
I didn't say that. I did not say that.
That's what I heard. Mandy? Mandy?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, you're 17. What's up?
Well, I've been having a hard time with my boyfriend lately. I've known him for 8.5 years, and we've been going out for about a year and a half. And all of a sudden, every time I call his house, his friends answer the phone. They're like, hey, what's up, and everything. He's not home. I'm like, where did he go? He went to his other friend's house. So I'm assuming that he's purposely avoiding me for some odd reason.
Yeah. You've known him for 8 years?
Yeah, I met him when I was like 9.5. I was little back then, and I'm surprised we've known each other that long.
How old is he?
He just turned 19. And I'll be 18 this July.
All right. You guys been going out for a year or so?
Yeah, and all of a sudden he's starting to turn me down and, like, just give me the cold shoulder. And I keep asking him, it's like, hey, what's wrong with you? He's like, I'm mad at you. And he told me he was jealous because I was talking to one of my old friends and stuff. And he thinks that my friend's going to take me away from him. So now he's giving me the cold shoulder.
Well, how long has he been giving you the cold shoulder?
About 2 months now, and he won't let me talk to him.
Hold on, 2 months? Hey, he broke up with you 2 months ago. That ain't cold shoulder. That's frozen nut. I don't know what that is.
Were you planning on marrying this guy or what?
He'd ask me every now and then. I'd say, you know what? No, I'm still going through school and stuff. And I mean, I've got my last year of school to finish. And
I think you guys broke up.
Yeah.
He just didn't tell you.
Well, he thinks that I'm trying to break up with him and stuff, and he thinks that I'm trying to get rid of him. And
have you guys gone out on a date in 2 months?
Yeah, we've, like, hung out and, you know, went and saw a movie and stuff. And
when's the last time you hung out with him?
Last Wednesday.
So So it's been, Jesus Christ, I was in New Orleans for 5 days. So
I don't know
what month it is.
Go
Pats! 7 days ago?
Oh,
Jesus Christ. I got to detox myself. All right. And did you guys, do you sleep with the guy?
No. I live in Buena Park. He lives in Santa Ana. And so, like, I have to take the public bus to go see him.
Uh-huh.
So you're not sexually active with him?
Oh, hell no.
All right. For those of you who are listening, Buena Park and Santa Ana are, I don't know, 25 miles. I don't know. They're just crap holes, both of them, right? You should move almost immediately. Don't date anyone from that part of the woods, even if you live there.
So one of the luxuries about being 17 is you get to go out with somebody, and then when you get tired of them, move on to somebody else. You're not hooked to the guy. And when a guy is 19, they change a lot from 17, 18 to 19, as you will. So it's a wonderful thing you get to go out with somebody else. It sounds like your relationship's run its course. And you guys can't, maybe you should just get together and talk about that. I don't know what you talked about last Wednesday.
She can't find the guy, so yeah. How are they going to do that? Just have your attorney arrange a meeting. Listen, this is over with, Mandy.
All right.
That's fine. This is the way it's supposed to go.
Yeah, and my mom and some of my friends are like, just kick him to the curb. Get rid of him.
Yeah. All right. Break up with him.
Don't exert that much energy.
But don't do that thing I've done many times when, the guy breaks up with the chick and you're like, I didn't want to say anything, but that fat whore, thank God you cut her loose. I mean, she was a pain in the ass, an ass the size of Texas. And then you talk to him 3 weeks later, he's like, yeah, me and Diane got back together.
And we're married. Oh, we're getting married.
And you're like, oh, that fat whore. I was talking about someone.
That other one.
Yeah, it's important to really make sure people have broken up before you start talking smack about the person, because there's all those things you want to say while they're together and you never do, and then they break up and it all comes spilling out over a few beers, and they inevitably get back together, at least for some period of time, and then you look like a major a-hole. So save all that stuff for at least 6 months after they've broken up. But every relationship when you're 16 or 17 goes on a year longer than it should.
Right.
And people just hold on and hold on, and there's this thing where we've invested 3 years, I'm not going to give it up even if it's not working out.
Mm.
Well, what kind of retarded thinking is that? You got something that's not working. I mean, I always say apply that to a job. You have a bad job. We don't get along with the boss. You've been there for 3 years. You don't want to be there for 4 years.
What if it's your first job, though? And when you're a kid, that's your first love affair. That's the first lesson you've had, and you're learning from it. So you don't know what is coming later.
That's right. That's right. Eddie is absolutely right. Are we talking about work, though, now? Relationships?
You were comparing.
No, you're right. I got confused.
You don't know what's going to come later. That's the most important thing in your life.
I was
going to
be like, well, are there, do you get paid OT, or is there 401k? Yes, you're in this
analogy. I was making officially an analogy.
Thank you. And you're right.
Don't get too abstract here.
No, but here's
concrete thinking is
real. Here's the deal too. Yeah, you don't. And when you've had a few relationships, you can then sniff out the ones that are gone south and get out of them at the 4 month mark.
My almost 13-year-old daughter called me the other day saying she was angry. I couldn't tell what the problem was. She said, I broke up with my boyfriend. I had no idea that there was a boyfriend. I don't even know what the concept of a boyfriend she's talking about. And as she was explaining to me, I was having a hard time not laughing, which would have been the hardest, the most stupid thing I could have ever done. So we talked through all this. This is the first time, and she's telling me that she knows she was on the school bus, and he talked with her friend, and there was some. I mean, it was a very convoluted thing, but the lesson that I think I learned from that is, at that moment, that was the most important thing in her life, because she was starting a whole brand new concept of something that she's seen adults and her parents and her friends and older friends do. So they build, I think my daughter is building like layer on top of layer every day of how to react with the opposite gender. Now, I'm 44 years old and I have no idea how to do it.
Well, but you're smart in that it's important not to laugh at your daughter when she's telling you her stories.
No, I was laughing because it didn't seem that serious to me. Why are you so, honey? Why are you so upset about this guy? Well, who cares? So what?
But it probably lasted 3 days. But it's so important for her to have you to have a dad to be able to bounce that off of.
But I know my girlfriend tells me stories about work. I start laughing. That's the other reason. You can't laugh at that one. Sharon McCluskey, Yeah. Oh, she comes in like she's the Queen of Sheba. She's wearing the same sweater I told her I was going to wear. It's important just to pull the phone away, because otherwise you start laughing in the middle of it. Then you start working in the I got real problems line, and that's when they go off. Bruce, you don't even talk to your wife, do you?
Well, I'm a sensitive guy. You know?
Yeah, I know.
Not like you.
That's called a puss.
I've had anal sex and I'm passed out.
Bruce, we haven't gone to break yet.
In racing, we have different words. It's even more aggressive than that.
Oh, really?
What's that? I got in trouble for saying shifting. And you want me to say that?
Anderson's there with his finger on the 7-second delay.
All right. Well, you tell us. Tell us during the break. All right. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we'll talk to Diana. She thinks her family's insane. Wants to know if it's okay to cut off all ties with them after
no
this.
Problem.
Hey, everybody. It's Loveline. Adam, that's Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce is filling in for Dr. Drew tonight. Dr. Drew is, I don't know where, doing I don't know what, but we don't care about
painful erection that will not go away.
But he still feel like he's with us in a way. Eddie Cheever Jr. is here along with Philippe Chiapone. Both great Indy drivers, and they're involved with the IRL series, which is the Indy Racing League, and that starts up March in Miami, beginning of March, and goes all the way through September 15th, and we were just talking about going out to on the 24th. That's the California Speedway one. Yes, I would love to go to that. I really enjoy those events, and I think a lot of people do, because there seems, I don't know what the average attendance is at those races, but it seems to be well over 100,000 people.
A lot of people, and it's the good thing about seeing an oval is that you can see the cars the whole way around the track, and there's a lot of stuff going on. There'll be battles in the front, battles in the back. And
they
it's pretty busy.
It's an event. And Steph, I went out there to do I think it was California Speedway last year, do a little bit with NASCAR. And those are some fans.
Hmm.
Oh yeah, yeah. Even too white trashy for me, I must say. The infield, the guys camped out in the Winnebagos there. They've been there since last year. They never leave.
They drink a little too much, fall off the top.
They put the Winnebago up on blocks. They get the they take the 12-pack container, and they take a piece of charcoal. They take a briquette, and they write, "Show us your boobs." And they sit up there just getting stewed all day long.
And that's a bad thing?
No, and it's not a bad thing. But when they recognize you from basic cable after the 15th beer and start screaming at you and chasing you on their three-wheeled ATCs, it gets a little hairy. And us Yankees, you know, we've seen Deliverance. Okay. And we're quite frankly, we're frightened by Southern folk. All right, let's talk to Diana. Who's 32, Diana? Diana? Oh, she's been on hold for 103 minutes.
Well.
Jesus Christ. Diana?
All right.
Well, listen, let me answer your question. You think your family's nuts? You want to know if it's okay to cut them off? I say yes. Let's talk to, I'll put her back on hold. Maybe she'll wake up. Dan?
Yes.
You're 31?
Yes.
What's up?
Hey, Adam.
Me.
Long-time fan, and Eddie and Philippe, longtime fan as well. My question is I was wondering what your take is on the Kart and the IRL getting back together again, because it just seems like these days, instead of like the talks, they're always talking, but it just seems now that the Kart teams are kind of migrating over to IRL.
What's Kart stand for?
Championship Auto Racing Teams.
All right, didn't know that. Well, what about it? These guys don't like each other, right? The Kart and the IRL? They're like the Hatfields and the McCoys, right?
No. This is... I'm getting so tired of answering this. But thank you for the question, and I will do my best to answer it in the least political and unbiased manner that I'm capable of.
Thank you. It just seems like the media just doesn't like
They take sides all the time.
That is true. There was a definite, and I'll be as brief as I can, there's a definite difference in philosophy as to how motor racing should be run between CART and the Indy Racing League. I race in the Indy Racing League, so I'm better at explaining their point of view than I am CART's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
CART is eclectic. They do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but they're not experts in anything. They try to compete in too many different fields. They have a great race here in Long Beach, which I'm very jealous of. I think it's one of the funnest events that I've ever participated in as a racing driver. But then they go in other places and they will race, and it just doesn't really make sense. And I believe that over time, the public became very confused with what they stood for. The IRL, on the other hand, races on American oval tracks. It's,
mm-hmm.
They've copied a lot of what NASCAR has done. We race on a lot of NASCAR's events at their racetracks. And it's a lot easier for the public to embrace it and to understand it. Another difference in this philosophy is that we have equal access to technology. What I mean by that is you can't have somebody like, just I'll choose a name, and I have a lot of respect for Team Penske, come in and outspend people by 10 times and win every race just because they have a better financial backing. So you can't go do that. I can go buy the same equipment that Penske can, whereas in CART that was impossible to do. So
right.
The races are a lot tighter. The competition is a lot more severe. And CART is a public company. It's run by a board. And it's almost like having the lunatics control the asylum. And they've made a lot of mistakes, and I think they put their drivers in jeopardy. They made a lot of irresponsible decisions over time. And they went to Texas, for example, the race without testing and checking, and the race car drivers are going too fast, and they have to quit because they had vertigo.
Right. They
oh, really?
So, I mean, I don't know who... They don't have any more feet to shoot off, so now all of the CART teams are coming over to the IRL because it makes good business sense. We have growing public, we race in great tracks, and there's a lot of young drivers that are coming up through. So I'm not trying to sound political, but I believe that good business in the end made the decision for everybody. When a team like Penske comes to the IRL, it's because it makes business sense. He's not a politician, he's a businessman.
What is, changing gears here slightly, what is your favorite year of IndyCar? Like for me, I think about those ones from the like early 70s, late 60s.
You know, I agree.
Those AJ Foyt cars.
Imagine.
And stuff.
He's American.
Yeah, they're really really cool looking ones. Well, I don't know, who was it? AJ Foyt had the blue one with the thunderbolts on it, or
no, it was an Unser.
Oh, that was Unser. That's right. Yeah, that was the best. You know, I don't like the Grand Prix cars now because they got the scoop on the bottom of the nose. Looks lame. To me, it's all about what the car looks like. I don't like that funky shark nose there with the scoop down on the ground.
Picky with your women? I mean, you have certain things that have to be there?
Yeah.
Are you that picky?
Yes, I am. Yes, it's all about what the cars look like.
Is there a cart-related question if you want to take that?
No. Screw those carters.
Okay.
Wait, who do you got here? We'll get to them. But,
they've been on 74 minutes.
Yeah. All right. Danny?
Hey, Adam. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Well, you know, I just wanted to say that hi to Dr. Bruce, Felipe, and Eddie. You know, so nobody's saying hi, so I want to say hi. Well, my problem is, actually, I don't know if it's a problem or not, though. Well, I'm 19, and let's say I'm having sex with my girlfriend, and after I finish doing, you know, my thing, I actually do it protected, you know, the right way to do it. And when I'm actually finished, I just feel completely disgusted with her. And, I mean,
you're
she's
gay.
Gorgeous. She's a great person. But I just feel like, I mean, I look at her, I'm like, wow, what am I doing with her? Just for that split second. And, you know, I want to call you guys and find out maybe you have some sort of diagnosis for my problem.
Well, why aren't you eating at this point? What are you doing still in the room? I mean, should
that?
Immediately be in front of the refrigerator. You should not be in the same room with her after you're done. You understand? That's where the problem
right,
is.
Right, right. I understand what you're talking about, but I mean, is this a? Yeah. I mean, is this normal? I mean,
well, you're disgusted with her. Like, why would she have sex with someone like you? Or what is your angle there?
More like, why would I have sex with her? Or just anybody else? Just women alone just disgust me. Just for that split, you know, 5, 10
You're gay.
Minutes.
Right, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm not gay.
Well, I hate to, again, work the experience thing, but you have a lot of feelings when you're younger about sex that seem to go away as you get older. Do you know what I mean? And it's just sort of, it's through repetition. Either your mind is racing, or you have negative thoughts, or you have crazy, you know, lustful thoughts, or all everything just gets turned down a couple of notches. And, you're back in a few seconds. It's just a couple of seconds.
It takes me, but it doesn't take very long, you know. It just takes just right after the climax for about, 10 to 15 seconds.
Yeah, all right. Well, there's nothing, you're not going to stab her or anything, are you?
No, definitely not.
All right, well, then just don't say anything stupid.
Right.
And you'll be fine.
Okay.
I don't know. What goes on in your a brain after that, during an orgasm in a male? I get hungry.
I wouldn't use the word disgust in anywhere near that experience, I don't think.
It sounds like he's got sleepy. Sleepy.
Yeah.
Why are you talking afterwards anyways?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You should be standing in front of the refrigerator.
It sounds like he's got some real ambivalent feelings about something in the relationship. I'd wonder that he's not a little bit confused about whether he should be in the relationship at some level. How long have you been going out with this gal?
I just hung up on somebody.
With her for about a year.
Yeah, year and yeah.
I've actually confronted her about it, and I've
sure.
told her that what I feel, and I was being obviously smart about it and not saying anything stupid, but I told her that just for that, and she understands, but I just want to know what the problem, or if it's a problem at all, but why does this happen? I love her to death, but that's just a problem that I keep having. Just right after.
Well, what do you focus on? Is there a part of her that you don't like?
No. I love everything about her. It's nothing, physical. It's just for that split second, I just get that feeling that, it's not an attraction thing, but more like I just don't want to see, her. I just want to leave. Maybe you're right about going and getting some food.
Yeah.
That'll help.
Yeah. It sounds like you have some ambivalence about the relationship. Maybe on some level you're not real conscious of at this point.
And probably.
Maybe the commitment. Are you thinking of marrying this gal, or what do you think?
Well, I haven't really thought about it. I'm still 19, still have my education to look forward to.
Is this your first girlfriend?
No, it's not, actually. It's my first girlfriend that I have sex with.
Oh, yeah. Right. There's a bunch of weird feelings that go on then. I remember, when I first started having consistent sex at 32, that a lot of ambivalent feelings,
For some people, there's a feeling of permanence in a relationship when you're having sex. Maybe in your mind somewhere, the fact that you're having sex with her implies that this is a commitment that's more than just, well, I'm 19, I got other things to do. And so there's some real conflict in your mind about you're sexually intimate with her, and yet you really don't have that kind of a commitment.
Oh, just listen, is a 19-year-old guy...
I'm not saying what he should do. I'm saying it sounds like he's got some real ambivalence there, because that's to have that disgusted feeling right after that kind of intimacy, that, wanting, being hungry, stuff like that for even you.
Everyone's always talking about trusting yourself and trusting your instincts and following your heart. At 19, don't listen to yourself at all. You got a lot of horrible ideas. You can trust your instincts, but not your impulses. A lot of crazy stuff runs through your head at 19. You got a lot of hormones going on. There's a lot of weird ideas you have.
I wouldn't be surprised if she's more, assuming this is more of a permanent thing than he is possibly.
Yeah, he loves her.
Right.
He just sees he's a crazy, Mr. Hyde kind of thoughts.
Right. Well, maybe she's okay with the fact that he's thinking, 6 months, we'll, get off this ship, get on something else, try something else. I mean, for women, it's like, I'm going to marry this guy. It's
Let me say this. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't Dr. Jekyll sound worse than Mr. Hyde, just as names go? Like, if someone just said, hey, you want to hang out with Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde? Yeah. You'd probably hang with Mr. Hyde, wouldn't you?
Oh, boy.
I'm just saying, I think they should have come up with a nicer name for Dr. Jekyll and then a meaner name for Mr. Hyde. You see what I mean? Dr. Hyde and Mr. Jekyll. That would have worked better. Would have been more
15
effective.
15 seconds. That is. What? How? Why is that a big problem? 15 seconds. I mean, if he's
of disgust.
Listen.
Possibly. If we ask Danny about his girlfriend's intentions in the relationship, I would assume that she's probably got a little more permanence in mind than maybe.
No,
his feeling
please
feeling.
Stop that. He loves her.
Ooh,
yeah. Who cares?
Who cares?
All right, let's take ourselves a break. Talk to Brian. His dad's a porno nut when we come back.
Oh, good.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right, after this.
She's on mom, too.
All right. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. After this. Hey, everybody. Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Bruce over there. Doing an adequate job tonight, filling in for Dr. Drew.
I've had anal sex and I passed out a couple times.
Very, very rare.
Can you make another recording?
That was a revelation that Bruce thought he was telling me off the air last time I was in the show, but Anderson had the mics out.
How about an I've had oral sex and whatever.
Got anything else?
Anything else in the menu of perversions and
obscenities?
We are talking about racing tonight, IndyCar racing, most specifically. There it is. That did sound like an IndyCar going by. Oh, no, that sounded like a NASCAR going by. Hey, don't you hate when you're watching a show and they, you know, they always put the car sound in later and they put the wrong engine in for the car? You guys get pissed off at that? All right, let's see if we can...
this is a good one.
Yeah, all right. Well, wait a minute. I thought we were going to talk to... Brian.
A woman with a nitro question. I like that.
All right, well, hold on a second, okay. Devil, because we'll go to that next. But okay. I sold Brian before we went to break.
All right.
That's radio. Brian?
Yeah.
Hey, hold on. We got to get this nitro question.
Okay.
No, go ahead. Your dad watches a lot of porno.
Yeah, he's a porno freak, like completely. Yeah. All he does is like spend a lot of our money on porno.
And, no, he does not.
He does.
How do you know?
Because it's all over the house.
No, it is not.
I swear it is. He keeps it in the living room table, DVDs in the den by the computer, Playboy, Penthouse, everything.
And he spends a substantial portion of your income on this?
Well, probably not, but...
Okay. Brian, you're describing Adam's house and lifestyle, so it's going to be very difficult for him to be objective about this.
How dare you attack my ways? And, let's see, a Taboo 2 theme song. Stop that or I'll begin masturbating. So, listen, you are very Pavlovian that way. Yeah, Brian, so what, is he cheating on your mom?
Yeah, he's also cheating.
How do you know?
Well, on the computer, he leaves pictures of himself naked at other people's houses, and he doesn't know that we know about it, but I haven't told my mom yet. And I'm wondering if I should, because...
What do you mean he leaves pictures of himself naked?
He like, has pictures of himself naked on the computer from other people's houses. And I know it's, like, an escort service, because if you look at his webpage history, he's got, like, porno escort services and stuff on there.
All right. I bet your mom knows about this.
You think so?
Yeah. I think she does. And do you hate him?
Well... Yeah, my sister hates him, too. He's,
Sounds like... Does he do drugs or booze or something?
No.
Really?
He's New York, so...
What?
But,
he's from New York?
Yeah.
Oh. So am I.
Yeah.
I don't have any porno in my house. Hey, does he have any...
Oh, you keep in the car, right?
Yeah, right.
Whatever.
Does he have any insight into his problem? Does he think he has a problem at all?
Oh, yeah. He's found Jesus 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He seems comfortable with all this porn, but...
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Here's your move. I realized my parents were idiots when I was, actually, it was just after I was born. I was right about, the umbilical cord was still attached. And here's what you have to do. You're 16, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to change your dad. He's not going to listen to you. You could get into boundaries and all that stuff, but he just sounds like a world-class jackass. You need to do well in school and go far, far away to college and try not to go gay. That'll be your first impulse to screw up your dad, but don't do it. Just go far away to college, start your own family, and then eventually you'll start leaving porn around the house.
Yeah.
It'll be one of those crazy
things. Here's an alternate plan, Brian. What your dad's got is a progressive disorder, and as much as Adam might not like to agree with me on this, this type of behavior with sex is addictive, and addictive behaviors are progressive, and it's going to take more and more of this type of activity to get him to the same level of excitement. And it's obviously,
I agree with all that.
Okay, it's destroying your family, and just as you do interventions with someone that's destroying a family with drugs and alcohol, you can do the same type of intervention with somebody like your dad. And what you're saying in an intervention is you're getting a professional to come in and help you say to him, look, we see what you're doing, you're destroying yourself, you're destroying our family, and we're not going to tolerate it. And a lot of times what the word tolerance is actually enabling you.
Yeah, but what's he supposed to do?
Well, get together with mom and sister. And this guy's old enough. He's an adult, basically. He's 16. And being exposed to this, what you're doing is you're saying, we're not going to live in the same house with this. Wait, if you don't get help.
You know mom's a piece of work,
no,
too.
No, mom's an enabler. Mom's...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Oh. Brian?
My sister screwed up, too.
Yeah, how's your mom doing?
She's like the nicest person in the family.
All right, can she muster some strength and set some boundaries up for this guy?
I don't know. I'm beginning to think that she doesn't even care that he looks at all this porn because she's so used to it.
Sure, she cares. She's deeply hurting about all this. And what you need to do
is but her dad's an idiot
too. There's more to it. There's more.
There's a lot more to it. There's a lot of abuse. Wait a second. Brian, look, what he needs to do is look in the phone book. You can find the same place you find Alcoholics Anonymous information, you find Sexaholics Anonymous or that type of a 12-step organization. And there are support groups or families with an idiot like this.
All right, well, do it.
The guy's sick and he needs help.
I agree. I'm just a little more realistic. I know his mom's a mess. I know her dad was a world-class jackass who probably abused her. Now she met an abusive idiot who's halfway to hell. This guy's practically graduated high school. Just get your grades up and get the hell out of there.
I've seen people like this say when they get help, I wish somebody would have stepped up to the plate and told, and said, look, I see that you have a problem and offer them help.
Yeah.
I've seen people thank
true for everybody and everybody on death row wishes someone would have stepped in at a certain point and steered them a different direction.
So if the family gets together and they get somebody to help them confront him in a loving way and say, look, there is help, but we're not going to continue to even live in the same house with
all right
us. And
good luck getting a codependent mom to go in on that.
Codependent mom needs support, and she needs to go to some...
So will you get an intervention for her to get on board with the intervention?
If somebody knows a problem, sit down with the three
Denise,
of them, she'll want to do it.
You're 27.
Yes, I am.
You drive a Nitro truck?
Yeah, I have just a couple statements. Have you been in the pits at a race?
At a drag race?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you sign your waivers before you go in those pits?
No, I didn't sign any waiver.
Well, then something's wrong because you're supposed to sign a waiver before you go in those pits. You guys don't realize how many safety precautions that we have to take.
Yeah. Oh no, I saw it. There's a piece of orange yarn in between me and the 20,000 horsepower nitro burning a grenade that was 10 feet away from me. Very dangerous over there. Very dangerous. No, why is that a safety precaution? That's just so I don't sue when the thing blows up and I get a blower belt up my ass.
That's why you signed the waiver, because you're assuming all liability for you to be down there.
I know, but hold on there, Nitro Mama. I'd like to get a look at this
You took me in those pits. You didn't tell me
she's
that dangerous.
She's got like that thrush muffler tattoo on her boob. But listen, here's all I'm saying. You arguing about how safe things are and then explaining the waiver part is not a great argument. You know what I mean? She was saying that it's safe in the pits and then saying you need to sign a waiver in case something exploded. That's all I'm saying. All right, we'll take a break. All right, well, that's the show. All you gearheads. I want to thank Eddie and Philippe for coming in here and plugging the great support of IRL Racing. And we're going to go out. I definitely, and Bruce, I know you'll want to go to this too. Definitely going to go out and March 24th go out to the California Speedway and watch these guys race. And that is, of course, we get the first class treatment. I like to stuff my gullet with food and get good and loaded before I stag around with the common people and watch the racers. So thanks a lot for coming in, guys.
It was a pleasure.
It was interesting talking to you guys. And until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Dr. Bruce. Say mahalo.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Ann Wilkins Engel. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.